Okay. Right. Welcome to episode 31 of the Never Iron Anything podcast. This podcast is an occasional chat with a buddy about a comics series or creator that we are fans of. It's taken over. It's still kind of locked down, but I'm doing them anyway. I don't care. My name is Tony Esmond, writer of the just-released Tony Osmond is a Movie Star, and editor of The Horizon Cafe by Emanuela Molari, which I highly recommend. Today, we have a new guest, another old geezer like myself. I'm sure he won't mind me saying so, and who is also normal for Norfolk. Yes, it's that kid from Wreck Road. It's Pete Dorry. Hey, Pete.
Hi, yeah. Hi, Tony.
I warned you about
what
that.
An intro. What an intro.
It's worth to say that Pete is also a comics creator, and we'll talk about that in a bit as well. Would you like to tell the listeners, Pete, what you have chosen as our subject?
I have chosen the wondrous, fantastic, amazing Vaughan Bodie.
Yes.
And we've had, and it is pronounced Bodie.
Yeah, we've had that conversation beforehand. Yeah, yeah. Bodie, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to just say, well, I might call this episode Sexual Social Satire Cartoons, because I think that's kind of what he called it, didn't he, I think?
He did, yeah.
Yeah. What was your first exposure to him, Pete?
Well, my first exposure was Epic Illustrated, which was, for those who aren't as old as you and me, was basically Marvel's version of heavy metal, but with a few less tits. And there was an issue that I can't remember the number, but it had a Steranko cover, and it had this thing called the Yellow Hat, which was Bodie's family-friendly version of his incredibly rude and socially, sexually, scatological thing, Cheech Wizard.
Yes.
I mean, if anybody's read any real Cheech Wizard, it's unbelievable. You know, he knocks up nuns. He forces people to have abortions. You know,
we'll get on to the. Let's face it. These days, would it fly? Yeah, there's a bit of that about it, isn't there, as well?
Well, it really wouldn't. But so there was this thing that was, he did it as a newspaper strip. He tried to get it as a newspaper strip,
right?
And it was funny, but it was kind of gently smile funny, not laugh out loud funny. But it was absolutely beautiful cartooning, and I genuinely think he's one of the greatest cartoonists ever.
Yeah,
because his stuff is he said himself, it's like animation. You don't need to animate Bodie because it's already animated.
Yeah,
it's so beautiful. So I just fell in love with that style, and I was like, who is this guy? Why have I never heard of him? Where can I get more? And then I turned the page, and there's an obituary. So he'd literally just died.
Oh, right. Of course.
Or he died a couple of years before, I think.
That is the thing with him. You and I are both Bronze Age kids. We love the Bronze Age. And you would follow a creator from a run on one comic to a run on another one and all this sort of thing. The thing is with him is, we wouldn't have seen a lot of his stuff, even if we had been alive, because a lot of it was in gentlemen's magazines, wasn't it?
Mm.
And stuff like that.
Yeah.
And he also jumped about a lot. So he was in National Lampoon, which was kind of on the edge of being a gentleman. You know, it wasn't overtly a porn mag, was it? But it had certain elements in it of that sort of thing as well.
It was definitely an adult magazine.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't have seen it.
Yeah. I think I always like to think of him as, he's kind of the Mark Bolan, physically as well, of comic books, isn't he? You know.
Absolutely. And I think the more I read about him, the more deliberate that was. He's kind of like Jim Morrison meets Mark Bolan, isn't he?
Yeah.
Visually.
Yeah.
And I think that absolutely was deliberate, because it's really interesting if you see photos of him as a young man when he was at college. He is Mr. Preppy, Mr. Student, straight-laced.
Right.
Military haircut. I don't know if you've seen any of those photos.
We had briefly had a talk about a film he's in. He's in a sort of short movie.
Yeah.
Which his daughter, I think it's his daughter, is it, who put it up? And it's called The Hustler, and it's a terrible movie. It was, you know, it was made in 1958, which I guess he was sort of 19 or something. And they're all very middle America, aren't they, looking kids?
Yeah, it's just a student film that him and his mates made for a lark one weekend, by the look of it.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure which one's him, but they all look of the piece. And I've got all his books, but one of his books is this book called Schizophrenia, which is full of all kinds of things, including some biographical essays that he wrote.
Yeah.
And it seems like sometime in the mid-60s he did what a lot of people did and just tripped out and freaked out and left society.
Yeah.
And he just became de Bodhi. He became this whole other thing.
Yeah.
And as I say, that Jim Morrison, Mark Bolan look, and, you know, in a way, a bit like Stan Lee did, he just reinvented himself as this other person.
Yeah, in less cynical times as well, man. Do you know what I mean?
No, he meant it. He, you know, if you watch, I mean, there is there's an interview with him.
It's the Toronto one.
Toronto, yeah.
That's a great interview, man. Really,
it is. Yeah.
If you find it on YouTube, it's in three parts, and it's quite revealing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but it's obvious that he meant it, didn't he?
Yeah.
He was everything he said, everything he did, he meant it.
Yeah. Let's run a little bit through his biography, sort of his biographical details. So he was born on the 22nd of July 1941, and he died on the 18th of July 1975, at 33 years old, so significantly young. He was born Vaughan Frederick Bode, without the hyphen on the E. He was born in Utica, New York, which I looked up on the map, actually, because I thought, oh, New York, that sounds cool. But it's actually 3.5 hour drive from Times Square. I worked it out. And it's about 2,600 miles from San Francisco. So it's not in a cool place, you know. I heard an interview with Jim Valentino where he compared... this is something that will jump back on you, because he said that Vaughan was the underground Steve Ditko, he described him as. It's completely coincidentally, because I think you just suggested to me that we talk about him, and I was listening to him. I'm like, oh, you know when suddenly you notice, and he keeps popping up everywhere now. And I know you drew them together in Stan and Jack, your comic.
I did. Because because I love him. He is one of my favourite. He's probably number... Well, I would say... I mean, obviously, Kirby is my favourite artist.
Yep. Every right-minded person thinks that, I think.
Yeah. The question is always, who's your favourite artist after Kirby? That's the real question.
Yeah.
But I think Vaughan's, you know, he's number three or four. And he's certainly the best cartoonist, as I say, as opposed to superhero artist.
Yeah. There's a real individuality to his art, isn't there? So you can't be anyone apart from his son, to be fair, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But it can't be anyone else, can it, really? When you look at it, it's got such a style to it that it's the only person that kept springing to mind is he's like the comics version of Zappa, is kind of where I went with it a bit.
Yeah, that's really good. That's a great comparison. Yeah.
The humour's slightly often puerile, as you've said, you know.
Yeah.
But also slightly off as well. Sometimes I don't find him overly funny because I'm not perhaps in that mindset of the guys back then, you know?
No, I don't often find him that funny, but I do find that there's more than you see on first glance.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I've got a theory that cartoonists are usually either writers who draw or artists who write.
Okay.
I'm a writer who draws. The words always come first, and the gags always come first, and then I go, well, shit, how am I going to draw this?
Yeah.
I think he thought, like Wally Wood, I think he thought completely visually, and then he thought, okay, what dialogue am I going to put here?
Yeah, okay. Should we go to Das Kampf first, which is not Mein Kampf for anyone who's listening, although it does mean the struggle, I think I'm right in saying.
I think so, yeah.
I've got a version of it which is it's like a flip book. One side is English and one side is French. And it's got quite a nice little essay all about him and about the creation of this in here. But came out in 1963 and is considered by many to be the first underground comic, isn't it?
Is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah. I think there's a couple of competitors for it. But it's sort of considered that one. Initially, as I understand it, it was drawn without the words.
Right.
And it was someone else who sort of urged him to add some words and then assisted him in doing it. And it's a guy who's a friend of his son's, whose name I will find in a minute. I can't remember now.
It's not Larry Todd, is it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Exactly right, man.
Yeah, they did a lot of stuff together, yeah. Yeah.
This came out in 1963, which you've got to appreciate. It was probably about the same time that Captain America was joining the Avengers. So it is completely out of its time, in a way. And it features two separate wars. So Second World War and Cold War seem to combine at moments. There seems to be a bit of both in this. And it's one panel gag strips. It doesn't work sequentially. It's sort of, I don't know what your version is like, but my version is there's sort of two on a page. in a sort of paper size thing. What did you think about that, man? Because it's very different from the rest of his stuff. It's black and white. It's more heavily lined than a lot of his stuff. Do you think?
Or? I think it's really interesting because it's that period, as I think we were discussing earlier, when he wasn't still quite that preppy college boy, and he wasn't Da Bodhi. It's between those two. It's almost like a band who do that first album that's okay, but the third album's the one, you know.
Yeah, I get you.
I mean, if that was all he'd ever done, he would still be my favourite cartoonist.
Oh right, okay, yeah.
But he had better to come for me, because there's a, you know, it is obviously an anti-war. I mean, the one, I can't remember how exactly it's phrased, but there's a shot of a soldier dead lying on a wall, lying across a wall. And it says something like, you know, war is when you're dead and you know you're dead.
Yeah.
That's not a gag.
That's
an anti-war statement. And it's full of that stuff. And he did return to anti-war stuff a lot later on. So it was obviously a big thing in society at the time, obviously.
Yeah.
It was Vietnam.
This essay compares it to, on the television at the time, was Hogan's Heroes. And they said, right, this is no Hogan's Heroes, you know. It's and there's moments, there's single page cartoons which nobody's got any eyes. It's one of the, he's not a fan of drawing a lot of eyes in a lot of his stories, but it's war is locking yourself out of your pillbox, which is him, this soldier sitting outside a German pillbox, you know. And one is war is when your generals are playing tiddlywinks all the time. Yeah. So you're right, it's got that double, you know, that metatextual sort of thing going on, isn't it? I really liked it. I understand, as I understand it, it came as a slight pastiche of the Charles Short's Happiness Is.
Okay.
And when I read it, I read that thing about Charles Short's, but when I was actually reading it, I thought it was like a sort of war version of, do you remember the Love Is horrible cartoons that used to get in the Daily Mail or something, was it?
Yeah, it's like that, but if that had balls and an intelligence,
Because he was in the army, wasn't he?
Briefly,
He joined the army. It depends which account you read here, but I've got 1957 to 1958 is the main one that I read. And he left due to being sexually harassed by a senior officer, suffered fainting fits, but continued with his brother was a Marine, I think, and was a Marine for a long time. But he had a fascination with the army, and even afterwards, when he was a cartoonist, he used to go parachuting.
Right, I didn't know that.
This is all in the extra bit in Das Kampf. There's this sort of a quite a long sort of 20-30 page essay at the back, which is quite good. But and it features the sort of war stuff. But the essay says that this was an early signal for his death, is the fact that he would go parachuting and he would pull the cord later and later and later as he was falling. Whether that be a death wish or a risk, you know, factor, he gets a thrill of the risk, or, you know, it's hard to say, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because it's really tempting, particularly because he died at 33, the same age as Jesus. It's really tempting to think he had a death wish or that he was born to die young. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, there is, I don't know if it says in there, you read on, but there is the implication in that schizophrenia book, in his biographical notes, that he had a nervous breakdown. Because later on he tried to tout his work about, he couldn't even get through the door at Marvel. And he ended up burning all his portfolios out of despair, and the only stuff that was left was Cheech Wizard. So
really?
He had to start all over again. That was the one thing he couldn't bear to destroy. So I think, you know, he had troubles in his life.
Yeah.
Definitely.
In that Toronto video he slags Stan off quite a lot, or Stan's way of working, I think, is more. He says, well, they wouldn't do that over there, you know, Stan Lee and all that sort of thing. But he did know Stan Lee somewhat. He talks about having been on a panel or a study or a course or something with him.
Yeah, I think the difference was, because as I said earlier, I watched that interview with his son Mark, and he was talking about it, and he said, absolutely, my father's whole thing was, I own my characters. Nobody can take them off me.
Right.
I mean, if you thought Eisner believed that, Bodhi really believed it. So he wasn't going to.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to give his characters to anybody.
There's a great book out of Fantagraphics. It's called Cheech Wizard's Book of Me by Bodie, which is it's quite expensive digitally, even. I think it's like 14 quid digitally, which is far too much for a digital comic. But because I got all excited about, you know, when you start looking at, you're a comics fan, when you start looking into a character, you've got to read it all, haven't you? And I ended up buying it. And it's interesting what you say about the Cheech Wizard stuff, because it's a mixture of all sorts of things. Some of it's on like LegalPad and, you know, old exercise books and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they did, Fantagraphics also released sketchbooks, but they were sketchbooks from when he was younger. And I wanted Cheech Wizard sketchbooks and Cobalt 6 sketchbooks. But this was the stuff even earlier than Das Kampf.
Okay.
So although it was nice, it wasn't essential, if you know what I mean. I know you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know.
You
know, yeah, I know. We'll get it eventually, Pete. We'll get around to it eventually, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
So should we talk a little bit about Cheech Wizard? So Cheech, he named allegedly, I heard him say this, so I always thought it might be one of those stories that people made up, but I actually heard him say it, but laugh about it. And it was named after Cheechy Nuts, which is some kind of peanut thing in America, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's like a tin peanut. I have seen them.
Right.
Yeah, he did laugh about it in that interview, and I wonder if somebody suggested it to him, and he went, "That'll do. I'll just tell people that."
Yeah, it's nice to have a little story sometimes, isn't it? Yeah, I know. Yeah, he claimed in an interview as well, in the same one, that he'd partly based him on W.C. Fields, and I thought, I love W.C. Fields. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, have you seen the cartoon concerts? Because that's on YouTube as well.
Yes, a little bit of it. Yeah, I haven't watched it all.
Yeah. Right, and when he does Cheech's voice, it's not what I expected, but it is kind of W.C. Fields.
Right, okay, yes, I have heard him that, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he writes with an accent. Often, so I said this about Will Eisner last week, but he does write. I do read them in a voice, you know?
Oh, yeah, me too. I always kind of heard Cheech as sort of more like Jimmy Cagney, but he read him in that very nasal way, and again, you know, just briefly or cheekily go back to mine. That's why I love writing him as a character, because he talks like his characters, and that's great fun to write that crazy dialogue, you know.
Yeah. Now, funny you should mention that that video, because he did a he did quite a few tours, didn't he? What he called the cartoon concert tour, and it was basically slides in a darkened room at comic conventions and bookshops and stuff, and he would do all of his voices. But for a long time, it wasn't like a couple of minutes. They would go on for quite a long time, these sort of things. And I read a thing that said he played Angoulême, and he also played in Le Louvre. He actually did it there. I thought, bloody hell, that's quite pretty impressive. He says, in the middle of the ones, he made me laugh. He said, should I have worked for Disney? What do you think? I can't see Disney doing it. Yeah.
He was too good for Disney.
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah. I mean, that's I think, when I first read him, I thought, oh, I've read this, I've seen this before in the cartoon, Wizards. He gets that a lot, I think, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, the story that I heard is that he knew somebody, it might even have been Larry Todd, who's this writer who did loads of stuff with him.
Yeah.
He knew somebody who knew Bakshi.
Right.
And it's very obvious if you watch Wizards, particularly the Peace character, the robot, that is 100% a Bodie character.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically Cobalt 60, really.
Yeah.
And Bodie was apparently furious about it, but there was nothing he could do about it. And I think it was a year before he died that film came out.
Okay, right. So people don't know Ralph Bakshi, they probably will know him because he did the original animated Lord of the Rings movie, I suppose, is where people would mostly know from. And what's the Ice and Fire, was it? Is that the name of it? I always forget.
Fire and Ice, which was Frank Frazetta,
there you go.
I mean, I love Bakshi's films. I think they're great, particularly the early, darker ones like Wizards.
Yeah, I watched the start of it today, and it's I forgot that the start of it is like animated comic panels, you know, with voices over the top of them.
Yeah, it's Mike Ploog, isn't it? Yeah.
Ah, of course it is. Yeah. Oh, I love Mike Ploog so much.
Yeah. I really want those panels. In fact, I think Bakshi's selling some of the sales, but like for huge amounts of money, obviously.
Yeah. Burglary. That's the way you'll do it. Burglary.
Yeah. But, you know, Wizards is great. And even, you know, I mean, these people are long dead, so who cares? You know, you can enjoy both these things.
Of course you can. Yeah. We're all influenced by somebody, you know.
Yeah.
So, going back to Cheech is a wizard he's kind of a, he's not even a shit wizard. He's just sort of a grumpy wizard who uses magic for his own his own ways, and he does it to get sex quite a lot, I think, doesn't he?
Sex and drugs, yeah.
Yeah.
But the great thing about him, and just to go back to the yellow hat slightly, and then when I went on to investigate the real Cheech Wizard, once you get past the beautiful artwork, you do notice that there is, as Bodhi would say himself, there is some kind of cosmic truth in Cheech. He does have wisdom. It's just that he kicks it out sparingly. I mean, the classic line that you and I both love, which he uses repeatedly, is if you want to be the Wizard's Apprentice, you're going to get kicked in the balls a lot.
He's always kicking people in the balls.
but that is wisdom in a way, isn't it? If you trust wizards, if you trust priests, if you trust gurus, you are going to get kicked in the balls.
Yep.
And that is what he's saying in those strips.
Yeah.
Don't believe in these people.
Yeah. He's a wizard who you only ever see the sort of bottom of his gut and his legs and feet, and the rest of him is a hat. Now, am I right in saying he never takes it off? I couldn't find any evidence of him taking it off ever.
There's two strips in that he takes it off.
Oh, okay.
One of them is in Cheech Wizard Volume 1, which is the one you've got, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep.
And it's a black and white strip. It's a wash strip.
Oh, okay, I've got that here.
Cheech is put in jail, and to get him out, he agrees that he's going to take the hat off, and he says, if I take it off, you'll all go insane instantly.
Right.
He takes it off, and they all do.
Right.
And he strolls out of jail. And then the other one, he's in bed with some girl, as usual. and she says something like, I'll only blow you if you take your hat off. And he says, well, okay, but you'll go blind. And he takes his hat off, and then there's just a white page, so she's gone blind.
That's even better than the John Byrne Alpha Flight pages. Even better. There you go.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's called a Phrygian hat. Phrygian cap. I looked it up. There you go. I don't know what that means, but that's what it's called. And he's got a sort of lizard apprentice called Raspberry, double Z.
Yeah. Who gets kicked in the balls a lot.
Yeah. The it's a strange combination. It's not erotic, but it's broad. It's bawdy, I suppose, is the way to put it.
Yeah. Do you know what? I look at it like it's almost like childhood fairy tales that you've turned away for a year, gone back, and they've all grown up. All your childhood, all the fairies and the pixies have grown up and are having sex and taking drugs. Because it sort of looks like a kid. You could show it to kids and they go, oh, look at the funny man in the funny hat.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you read the dialogue.
Yeah. And even... I don't know, maybe it's because I've saw it at, you know, when I picked up Epic from a news agency in Ipswich, but there's something slightly wrong about just him, about his image. I don't know why I think that. It just seems so...
What about Cheech?
Looking at Cheech, I think, yeah, he's wrong. It's probably because I'm hearing his voice and I know what he's doing. And the women in it, right, maybe I'm drawing too much conclusions here, but the women look a little bit like Vaughn.
Well, I think that's probably true and probably deliberate, actually.
Right, okay.
Because he always said that the lizards are him and Cheech is him, so why wouldn't the women be him?
That's true, yeah.
And he was, you know, he was omnisexual, metasexual, homosexual. He was every kind of sexual guy.
Yeah, that's an exact quote from him, though, isn't it? That's
he says that,
doesn't he? He lists off a long list of things that he didn't know how 2019 he was, you know. These days.
No, he'd be a superstar now, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I mean, there was a time when people were freer of their sexuality. I mean, I know he shared a studio for a short amount of time with Jeffrey Jones before he became Jeffrey Catherine Jones, and I'm sure that was a place of great experimentation in all sorts of areas, I suggest, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the Jeff Jones documentary.
I have, man. It's so sad, isn't it? Yeah.
It is so sad, yeah. Especially the opening where he says... And I still call him he, which he liked.
Yeah, I think he that's what he wanted. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, he says, "Who is Jeffrey Jones?" I don't know. That's so sad.
Yeah.
But there's a bit of Wheezy Simonson, and she says, you know, they just used to, or Vaughan got Jeff into wearing dresses, and he felt much more comfortable in dresses.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that. Woodstock.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, don't know. Maybe they were lovers. Who knows?
Yeah.
There's a play. There's a movie.
Yeah, there is, isn't there? Yeah. Why there's not more about him, I don't know. He's He's another one of those secrets. Unless you're really into comics, you don't really know about him. It's a bit. I always compare him to Toth. You know, Toth is sort of that.
Oh.
You know, there's no kids running into comic shops buying the new issue of Batman knowing who Toth is, and the same with Bodie as well. I think. Yeah.
Well, Toth is. I think you only get into him when you grow up.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't. I don't know anyone on Twitter in real life, whatever, who says I loved Toth when I was a kid.
No, exactly.
Not even Sean says that.
Right. Yeah.
It's always you get older and then you appreciate him, and maybe it's like that with Bodie as well.
Yeah.
Although he's probably easier to get into.
Yeah, I think
just because
his images are so iconic, aren't they? They're so individual. Yeah. They're so. I've said that before, but they are. You spot them a mile off.
Yeah.
I saw a quote from someone that said he's a mixture, a cry of joy mixed with terror, and that's a funny thing to say, but. There is a joyousness to his stuff, but there's also a tragicness to his, you know, now that we know about him a bit more.
Yeah, and there's also an incredible darkness to some of his stuff. I mean, I remember one strip in there's four books called Bodhi Erotica.
Yeah.
And there's one with one of the lizards wraps up, it's a bondage strip basically, he wraps up his girlfriend in leather, puts her in a box and then buries her and then walks away whistling to himself. And you're like, Where's the joke there?
Yeah.
Did you do that, Vaughan? Did you actually do that?
It's kind of the ultimate bondage, is it? I don't know. There's a very thick line between pleasure and pain for me, Pete, so I don't really understand all that side of things. But yeah, maybe.
No, I don't either. But it's that kind of, you know, because all of his stuff is about him.
Yeah.
You wonder how much of it, I mean, obviously he didn't knock up nuns or anything. Yeah. I don't know.
We've all been there.
But, you know, he's putting his fantasies on the page there, isn't he? That's exactly what he's doing and going, well, you deal with it if you don't like it. That's my fantasy.
So that's from that. I think a lot of the erotica books come from, is it the Dead Bone series?
Well, yeah, there were sort of two Dead Bones because the erotica stuff was in Cavalier, which was a kind of upmarket dirty book, I think, wasn't
it?
And he called that Dead Bone erotica. And then he did this other thing called Dead Bone, which was much more philosophical. It was just this bunch of characters living on a mountain, philosophizing about God, life, and the universe. And they're both brilliant in their own way.
Yeah.
But they're not really connected.
Yeah. I think we should also mention the drugs use he has. You can't but notice that there's got to be something going on there. You know, when you think a lot of this was created in the Summer of Love and just pre and post. I know he talks a little bit about he creates only when he's stoned. I think he says something like, "This is you watching me draw isn't me creating. That happens beforehand. The ideas, I think he says, the ideas flow when you're stoned." Now, what that was, he doesn't specify. I mean, probably people guessed it was, you know, cannabis or something soft like that. You know, quaaludes or something maybe. But I'm guessing there's got to be some LSD. If ever there is a comic that has got an LSD element to it, it's this. I think, you know.
Yeah, completely. But I also think he said that for effect in that interview as well, because I've never tried LSD, but I can't imagine you produce much work on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's said repeatedly that it takes, you know, a team of horses to drag him to the desk to actually start work.
Yes.
So,
yeah. And he says that's the same for all artists. He kind of impresses people with that. I don't know if it is, but that's what he says.
Well, it is for me. Yeah. So the first time I saw that, I was like, "Oh, thank you, Vaughan. Yeah, you're absolutely right."
Going back to Cheech. So Cheech, he talks about sex an awful lot, and he does get he does get some here and there for a thing that's just a hat and feet. He gets quite a lot, and he's pretty unappealing, isn't he? Like you say, he's like Jimmy Cagney, like a grumpy Jimmy Cagney getting sex with a hat on all over the place.
But then women like bastards, don't
That's
they?
True.
I suppose.
Yeah.
What else are they going to do? Ball the lizards who don't even know. In fact, I think he says, the assistant at one point says, "I haven't even got any reproductive organs. What use am I going to be?"
It is so strange, isn't it? It's just sort of, I've gone down the rabbit hole of him this week, sort of getting ready for today. And there is an addictive quality. You hear, you start seeing things in the way he drew them, and you start hearing people's voices in the way he sort of intones them.
It's a universe, isn't it? And, you know, I think he said again in that interview that he was he's got like 15 universes and put it all down on paper, and Cheech is just one of those universes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is complete. It is complete.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it's not a sort of, it depends which bit you read of Cheech as well. It's not automatically a long running strip. It's little bits. Some of them are just a panel here and there, aren't they? Or a couple of panels. Mm. And it actually suits guided view. We're both old men. I've had to become used to digital comics, Pete, but it actually suits, it actually sort of suits a guided view button press. You know, I kind of like it like that. It's sort of nice to see it all lit up on a backlit screen, you know, especially the colour stuff, definitely.
Well, again, it looks like animation, doesn't
yeah.
it? And I think we'll obviously talk about Cobalt 60 in a bit, but I think that's the really interesting thing about Cobalt 60, what Mark did with it.
Yeah.
Because Vaughan, again, is on record as saying, or Larry Todd said, he couldn't do more than three pages in anything. He just didn't have the will to do it. It drove him mad.
Right. Okay.
Because he's like, I've got that idea. I'll put that idea down. Then I'll move on to the next idea. I don't want to do an epic.
Yeah. And I think the style of it suits that. To be fair. Yeah.
It does. Yeah. Yeah.
Let me just ask you this then, a bit of a devil's advocate question. What do you think of the humour? How did it? Is there any bits that you could recommend, or you think people would get these days, or is he past his time for that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's tricky. I think he might be slightly.
Yeah.
I think it's like, if you read a Golden Age book, even a very good one, you kind of have to step back and look at it almost as a historian. You don't enjoy it as a fan, I don't think.
Yeah, I think you're right, man. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Because it's of its time, isn't it? It's slightly cruder, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even ECs. You kind of go, okay, I'm going to read some ECs and I'm going to take it very seriously. And you don't quite enjoy it in the same way that you enjoy, you know, a romp issue of Spidey or something like that.
Yeah, I think sorry, man, I interrupted you there. Go on. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, so I think there is an element of that with his stuff. I don't know that I've ever found it that funny. I find the visuals funny, but I don't particularly find the jokes funny. Although there is one I love, which is it's his version of Dracula and the Frankenstein monster.
Right.
And Dracula comes home and the Frankenstein monster is his butler, and he turns around and he says, I told you to pick up that goddamn chair 3 weeks ago. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, I get you. It reminds me of stuff, like I said, like earlier, you know, Zappa, watch how we, the Huskies go, don't you eat that yellow snow. When you're 16, it's funny, isn't it? You know, it's puerile funny. It's like, although I still find Derek and Clive quite funny because I'm an idiot, but it's almost a bit of it was dangerous and I suppose almost like naughty, and that maybe with a certain age you would find it funny, and you would definitely, if you had these in the fifth form at school, you'd be showing your mates, wouldn't you, and laughing, and
you'd be sniggering. Yeah. I think it's more the philosophy that I get out of it these days. It's more what he's really saying underneath that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, one of the best things he ever did was The Man. Have you seen any of The Man?
I don't think I have. No, I don't think so. Right. Yeah.
It's really early. It might even be before Das Camp.
Right.
It's probably published after, and it is. The first human.
Right.
And there's just him, his little pet lizard, and his stick. And his stick is his friend, and he talks to his stick.
Right, okay.
And it's full of him up on mountain screaming at God. And,
right.
It's really sad, and it's really moving, and there's very little dialogue, but it's brilliant, because just with a couple of lines and a couple of words, you absolutely get this lone human's loneliness and fear, and you know, he looks at the stars and he's terrified.
Okay.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, sounds great.
But it's not funny.
yeah.
And a bit like Cobalt 60, he probably depressed himself with it and probably went, oh, enough of that.
So we'll get on to Cobalt 60 in a minute. I think we'll probably finish on that one, because I know that's the one we first started talking about. We started talking about this.
Yeah.
I thought we might mention a few, and I know you've got copies of these. Is Junk Waffle, which was kind of issues 1-4 was his own book, kind of, was it?
It was, yeah. And then I think Last Gasp republished it, because what I've got, just reaching around, I've got doesn't even say what issue it is. Never noticed that. I've got one of them.
Right, okay. Yeah. So I think, was it 1-4 was him, and then did his wife was it his wife who he divorced by that time? Didn't she, after he died, she brought some out in the late '70s, early '80s, or something? I think.
Yeah, this actually. Yeah, looking at this one, this is 1983, copyright Barbara Bowden.
Right.
So yeah, she, and the introduction's by her. So she's obviously like put together some of his unpublished stuff.
Yeah. And then the other ones I want to talk about was Sunspot,
which is
from Galaxy Science Fiction, which was, I'm taking it was like a pulp magazine or something, was it, of some kind?
Well, Galaxy was, yeah, but Sunspot ran in heavy metal. It ran in the first year of heavy metal as well.
Yeah, in the French version or?
No, the American version.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Because in that Mark Bodie interview, he talked about it and he said my father was asked to do this magazine called Heavy Metal. And he said, yeah, I'll do it if you call it the Bodie magazine. But eventually he agrees. But Sunspot is one of those ones that it never got finished because it just ends with them all dying.
Yeah, and I read
it?
About this because apparently he fell out with somebody, a publisher. He didn't like the censor. Right. He was trying to censor him in some way. And he said, no, fuck that. So he just killed them all off. But as I understand it, he got the job for that through an association with Frederick Pohl, you know, the science fiction writer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there
okay.
was some kind yeah. of connection there. Because, of course, people... he won a science fiction award, didn't he, quite early on? Was it a Hugo, I think?
Yes, for some illustrations for probably something like Galaxy.
Yeah, and I think he was sort of the hot... He was hot shit at that point. And he managed to get some other jobs. Because He had little periods where he didn't have a job at all. I think they tried to... Didn't him and his missus try and go on a Vespa all the way from Utica to San Francisco or something at one point?
I've not heard that, but yeah,
and probably. It broke down and they sort of thumbed a lift back or something.
Right. Dressed as he was. Yeah,
yeah exactly. Yeah, yeah. And then the other one I wanted to mention was Purple Photography, which I know we were chatting to Simon Russell about earlier online. Which was was it? I'm not sure how this worked out, but did Bernie Wrightson reimagine some of the characters for covers? Is that right?
No, I've got it in front of me, okay. Tony. And what it was, I'm just reading his intro. 1969, Dead Bone was in Cavalier, as I said. It was so successful that they asked me to do Purple Pictography.
Which I think was that not in Swank magazine?
That's right, Swank.
Which I think was like the sort of low-end... sister magazine to Stag, which I know you've got a vast collection of.
I have, yeah. And for whatever reason, he asked Bernie Wrightson to help him. See, I wonder, and this is the bit that makes me throb with excitement, because my all-time favourite thing of all time is The Studio.
Yes, you know, The Studio? Yeah, the book that the four guys brought out, that one.
Yeah, yeah. Jeff Jones, Barry Smith, Mike Kaluta and Bernie Wrightson.
Yeah.
And so obviously Vaughan and Bernie knew each other. And I wonder, you know, the thought of him being in the studio with those four guys.
Yeah.
You know.
And obviously Neil Jones as well, didn't he? So there's at least two connections there, yeah.
Yeah, so give me a time machine, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one I've got, which is Eros Comics. It's only a thin sort of 24, 32-page comic.
Okay.
So there's 2 to 3-page strips by Vaughan and then 2 to 3-page strips by Bernie.
Right.
Now, looking at the Bernie stuff, I can't see any Bodie in it, so I think he just wrote them.
Right, okay, yeah.
But they are beautiful, as you would expect.
Yeah. I think he did some... I think I did read that Wrightson did some of the covers for Bodie, I think, of the... Maybe not... Couldn't have been for Swank, could it? I don't know why it said that. I was in that... It was in an article I linked to from his site. I'll look that up again before I post this. And find out what it actually meant, but
it might have been Warren. He might have done some for maybe. Warren because he did some with Larry Todd and Jeff Jones, didn't he?
Before we get so let's do. I think we'll do Cobalt, and then we'll talk a little about a little bit about him, how he left us. So
okay.
Cobalt 90 is, as I understand it, it was a character he drew in 1958 when he was in his I think his late teens, and then in 1968 he drew a 10-pager for. Shangri L'Affaires, which is the name of the magazine, is that right?
Well, it was in Wally Wood's Wits End. I don't know if it was anywhere else before.
Yeah, it was
that.
Reprinted in Wits End. And I think it was in Junk Waffle 3 as well before. After that, it was in Junk Waffle 3. It got repeated, got reprinted a number of times. Junk Waffle, Wits End, Metal Hurlant, Epic Illustrated, and Tundra bought out a magazine as well. God bless them. Good old Tundra.
Right.
And that's where we started talking about this. And this is the one that I, when I was a kid, I read. I remember picked up a copy of Epic magazine. It wasn't in the comic shop in Ipswich. I was sort of wandering around, having bought comics, and I saw this, and I thought, oh. And I almost felt bad for buying it, because you're right, Epic magazine had that adults-only look to it, didn't it?
Yeah.
And that's where I saw it. And I think we'd seen Wizards. We used to have like a cinema show on a Saturday night in the boarding house. And I think I'd seen Wizards that, and I thought, I just automatically presumed it was Wizards by Ralph Bakshi because of the similarities.
Right.
And that was full colour. I'm trying to remember now. I've got it in front of me in the Epic magazine.
Well, the one that he did was black and white, but the one that Mark did was in colour.
That's the one I saw then.
Continuation.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did he just do that single one-pager then, did he?
No, he did a 10-pager, which I knew from Wits End and Epic.
Yeah.
And then he started one... which I think is just in pencil, which is even darker,
right.
Even more awful. In that one, Cobalt finds the last fertile woman on Earth and kills her. The end.
Right, bloody hell. Yeah.
And then the very next issue, which is, I guess, why Epic ran it, I think it was the next issue, might have been the same one,
right.
Mark Bodie took it over because he decided, I think Archie Goodwin had said to him, do you want to continue some of your dad's stuff? And he said, well, I don't really want to do Cheech.
Yeah.
But I'll do Cobalt 60. So he then went and did this whole series, which is the one you saw, which was beautiful, wasn't
yeah.
it? And brilliant.
Lovely colours, all that sort of thing.
Beautiful, yeah. Beautiful.
And you're hard-pressed to discern between the two sometimes, aren't you? There's similarities to them.
Yeah, I mean, that's understandable.
Yeah.
I mean, I've also got a book called The Lizard of Oz, which is the cover is by Vaughan. It's a painting of Cheech and all his gang
right.
as the cast of The Wizard of Oz. And he did it as a painting at a convention, and then Mark did a whole book. He eventually said, all right, I will do Cheech.
Oh, wow.
And that's really interesting as well, because it's one whole story, not one pages like we're used to.
Yeah.
I mean, the only difference really between the two of them is that it's difficult to describe, but they are different. Mark isn't Vaughan, so he doesn't have that worldview.
Yeah.
It's almost like a brilliant cover version.
It's like a cleaner version somehow to me.
Yeah, yeah. Somehow, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
He is. But he'd probably be the first to say it. He's not his dad. He doesn't think the same way his dad did. Cause
yeah.
Who the hell does?
Yeah. And there's a lot of videos of him drawing the character as well, which you can find a lot
yeah.
of. And I think probably something that we haven't mentioned that I know a pal of mine, Sarah Harris, is very into street art. And I think a lot of people will know his work beyond and above the comic stuff he's done from the early adapters of his characters on the side of subway trains in New York and stuff like that. Yeah, that was
yeah. Well, all over the
yeah.
All over the world, really. You can see the lizards everywhere, and you can certainly see that blocky lettering.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, huge influence. I know I've written down some names, so I'll try and sound cool, although I don't know what street
okay.
I should understand it.
No, neither do I.
Yeah. Is Dondi Seen, S-E-E-N. So you've seen, there you go. And Mayor 139 yeah. were three of the sort of prime people. I'm reliably told by my contact. But
they were great. Loved them. No idea.
Yeah, none at all. Yeah, I saw Beat Street when I was 15 or something, and that's the last time I saw any of it. Yeah, yeah. Draw a comic, don't draw on a wall. That's my
yeah. yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then it all came to a sort of tragic end, didn't it, Pete? It was
yeah.
But linked to a lot of the themes we've been talking about, I suppose, in a weird way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the story that I heard, and I've read it in a couple of places, is that Mark was actually there, or at least in the other room.
Yeah, he spoke to him beforehand, is that right?
He said, I'm off to do my God thing.
Yeah.
And then he went and tried some autoerotic asphyxiation and choked to death.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is the most bizarre death ever, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm not a big fan of Russell Brand, but he does say, if you're strangling yourself whilst wanking, you're about to die, then stop strangling yourself. I think he's...
Yeah. But then I think, you know, I think he tried everything else, hadn't he? I mean,
yeah.
you know, just politically, religiously, sexually, he tried absolutely everything and talked about everything and, you know.
Yeah. And wasn't there an element of it was the third time he was going to communicate with a greater consciousness or something like that?
That's right. It was the third time and he'd got away with it twice. Yeah.
That's right. So I think there was some kind of in the moment, you know, he thought he was, you know, in the old Grant Morrison, you know, myth, he was communicating with spacemen or God or aliens or you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he sadly died and at the age of 33, like you said, at the same age as Jesus Christ himself. But it's a sad one. It's a great loss to us, I think. You know, if he'd have carried on, who knows what he'd have done.
It would have been very strange to see him as an old man.
It would have been, wouldn't it? Yeah, he'd been that annoying bloke who told you about how he was a hippie in the 60s a lot.
He would. I mean, it's, again, you don't want to labour the point, but maybe he was one of those people who, like Morrison, just burnt briefly and flickered out, you know.
Yeah, and I know Fantagraphics have bought his books back, you know, here and there recently. I think Fantagraphics and maybe a couple of other companies are the only ones who could do it successfully without feeling the wrath of social media, I suppose.
That's true.
There is, I mean, I was reading one in Cheech earlier, and it's all about a girl turns up and she's got a bald pussy, as he says. And I'm like, oh dear, you know. So, there's elements of it that I think probably would, I mean, I don't care. I mean, I'm in my 50s, so I don't really care, but there's some people who would jump on board it. But it's a thing of its time. It's a beautiful thing of its time that we can't get rid of, you know.
No, and you can't censor it.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, if you needed to come up with a defence, my defence would be what you're getting here is the id of one man, his entire personality on paper. You might not like what he's got to say, but this you're getting this direct from it's art.
Yes.
And this is what we as comic fans respond to, you know.
Yeah, there's a purity isn't there of it because he's that singular vision. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We like the trash. We like the fights and do. Spidey beating up Count the Fairy or whoever. But this is art. This really is art.
Yeah.
In the truest sense.
And it's the origins of counterculture art, isn't it? It's the origins of the Pegasus Society and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, and it could be worse. You could look at, I don't know, Trash Man or something like that. You know, or Crumb even.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd rather look at Bodie than Crumb.
I know, and they knew each other, didn't they? As well, I think there were sort of two sides of a coin, almost, weren't they? You know, Bodie was that cool Mark, like we said, Mark Bolan, and Crumb was the geezer in the raincoat in the corner, almost.
Exactly. Yeah. At least Bodie was honest about his sexual peccadilloes.
Take it or leave. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What would you so we'll finish up in a sec, but I just got a couple of questions for you to end up there. What would you recommend as a book? Someone was coming into it and let's pretend everything is available. Not everything is, but let's pretend everything. What would you suggest?
Probably Cheech, because if you're gonna go, you're gonna go into the deep end. I mean, the erotica stuff is not that different to Cheech, really.
Yep.
Deadbone is probably more for the hardcore fans.
Okay.
But no, I'd start with Cheech, and if you can handle Cheech, you can handle the rest of it. Because he's, yes, he is an arse. He's a horrible person, but he is kind of lovable as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, we're familiar with him, and we kind of side with him throughout it, don't we? We kind of do want him to get into that woman's knickers, don't we? It's kind of a bit like that. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what about you though, dude? What would be your favourite work of his?
It's probably the erotica stuff because it's even more beautiful than the Cheech stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Although again, Schizophrenia, which is a much smaller book, it's not like the large trade size, is a good one for the fans because it's full of biographical stuff, and the strip Schizophrenia itself is him on the moon telling you his entire philosophy about everything.
Right. Yeah. I get it. Okay.
So for fans, that's probably a great one to go with if you really want to know him.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a quite a lot. If you dig enough, there's a lot out there. There's a lot of essays on him. There was obviously a little period where people thought he was a cool guy. You know, like you say, you know, he could have been the lead singer of the Doors, couldn't he? Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably be a better singer.
Yeah.
Cool. Right, we're gonna pause there for a second. I'm just gonna do our sponsor, a very popular new sponsor, and then we're gonna just ask you a couple of things about what you got on the go at the moment, Pete, if that's right.
Cool.
Now we're gonna pause for a word from our sponsor. Isn't the drain of daily life a frustrating experience? you can just feel the world bearing down on you and you haven't got any way to stop it. Would it help if you could go online and bleat and whine like a baby? Why not join Twitter? Legal warning, may cause loss of sexual appetite, anger management issues, and cause you to take so many photographs of yourself that you might cease to exist in the real world. Okay, that's just our sponsor. Very excited about that.
Perfect. Do you know what somebody said on Twitter the other week? I thought it was brilliant. They said, if you want to know what it's like being on Twitter, just honk into a bin like a goose.
I've got a whole new image of where you live in Norfolk now, Pete. Right, now I have recently purchased Stan and Jack from you, which is also now in Comic House, as I understand it. Is that right? It's on Comic House.
Yes, yeah. It is, and thank you very much for buying it.
My pleasure, man. And a great book it is too. And totally suited for people with a love of the history and of comics and stuff like that. So you were saying to me earlier you actually completed the first issue of that some time ago.
The first three issues, right, about okay. 10 years ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Long before there was any clue as to where I'd go and print it, that I could afford to do that or sell it on or anything like that. And then I just put it in a drawer and forgot about it, stupidly.
All right.
But again, my mates just nagged me and like,
yeah,
put it out. Yeah. People are going to like it. And yeah, luckily people have, because everybody's like me.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody's like, you know, you're going to get the jokes. You're going to get the fact that I'm slagging off Vince Coletta or Stan stealing the credit from Jack yeah. or all that, those kind of digs. You're going to get those gags because they're the kind of gags you have to do when you do this kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, I describe it as that old issue of What If, where the bullpen were the FS.
Oh, I love that issue. I was only talking about that this morning. Yeah.
Right. I describe it like that, but as if Mad Magazine had done it.
Yeah, no, I get that totally, man. Yeah. Yeah, I can honestly see Don Martin drawing it. I've got to tell you. Yeah. There's a little bit of that style to it, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know,
yeah.
Really.
And it's just a romp, you know. It's Stan and Jack and Gil Kane and Wally Wood and Vaughn Bodie and everybody I love.
Is it when they meet Gil Kane, he does that stance? He does that.
Yeah, again, if you're going to do Gil Kane, you've got to do
a bit of him near the camera, a bit of him away from the camera.
Yeah. I mean, these are all jokes that write themselves. They really do.
So have you released the third one yet? I'm not sure, actually.
No, right. I've got to do, I'm just going to leave it a couple of months because I've only just put the second one out.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make my money back on that, hopefully.
Yeah.
I've still got to do the back cover, which is going to be another Vaughn Bodie and Steve Ditko gag. Because I love those two. I love putting those two together because they're complete opposites.
Yeah.
I've nearly finished the fourth issue this week. I've got about two pages left to do. So that is Jack gets stuck in the mind of Steve Gerber.
Right, brilliant.
For the whole issue.
So I said Steve Gerber to a lady in a comic shop the other day. She mentioned something and I said, oh, was that like the Steve Gerber that time he did it? And she just stared at me. I better pay for these then. I did one of those. I love Steve Gerber. Mm. Oh my God.
Oh, me too. Love him to death.
I think I can be quoted as recently saying on a podcast, is that recent Man Thing series, as if someone just whipped their cock out and weed on the fucking grave of him. You know.
I would. There are certain things. I know these characters have to carry on. They're licensed characters, but I will never read a Howard the Duck comic because it's not Gerber.
Yeah.
What is the point in doing, you know, well done, good for you, you got paid for it, you got a job, great.
Yeah.
I ain't gonna read it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if somebody else did Killraven other than McGregor and Russell, forget it, I'm not gonna read it.
I'm a huge Killraven fan, man. One day you and I will talk Killraven, but it's one of my favourite things ever. I'm totally obsessed with it, and that you can see the Atomic Hercules references together.
Yeah, of course.
And then Alan Davis, who I love to bits, did it, and it was fucking awful. It was an all-ages Killraven. Yeah.
Well, do you know what happened there? I think it's enough time has probably passed that I'll get away with saying.
Right.
I was at a con in Bedford a couple of years ago where I actually...
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Oh, was it? Because me and Sean got to interview Don.
I met him on that one. Yeah, that was... Do you know what? He was the only fucking guest there on time. Him and Alan Davis, they were the only two there. The rest of all these cool American guests are all still in bed or something. And I sat down with him and I had the best talk ever. And he wouldn't even let me go. He said, no, sit down. I want to tell you, you know. And he's like, brilliant. Ah.
Yeah, he was fantastic, wasn't he? But apparently what happened was I was talking to, I can't remember the name of the guy who runs the con, which is awful.
It's not something. Chantel.
He owns the shop.
Close Encounters. Yeah.
No,
Jeff,
that's his brother.
Jeff, somebody. Yeah.
Jeff. Of course it's Jeff. Yeah. So I said, "Oh, are they going to do a Killraven panel together? You know, that'd be good." And he said, "No, we asked Alan Davis." He said, "I don't give a fuck about Killraven." when I was given that book, it was a completely different character.
Oh wow, okay.
But then they made me do Killraven.
Oh really? Oh wow.
So that's why it's a bit near.
And of course, but there is that, like, other Killraven floating about. You know this, don't you? That Kirkman and Liefeld did him.
Oh yeah, Liefeld did it, but it never came out.
That's right. Yeah. I'm not sure if it's complete or not.
No, it doesn't even vaguely look like Killraven. Yeah. But again, what's the point? Yeah. Get Don's still alive, Craig's still alive, get them to
Mate,
do it.
Why aren't we getting these people in? You know, Steve Englehart, Marv Wolfman, all these sort of people.
Don't know. Yeah. I mean, and they can still do it. Yeah. I mean, there was a Black Panther annual that McGregor wrote, or he wrote one of the stories in it, and it was Monica Lynn's funeral.
That's right, yeah, I read that one. Yeah.
And it was brilliant. It's like, you've still got it. You can still do it.
Yeah. No, I did.
I'm sure.
I did a little thing on Ron Wilson the other day saying, why isn't Ron Wilson drawing stuff? I love Ron Wilson. You know, these sort of guys. Yeah. They're all still about, man. You know, look, we'll regret they're gone. Look what happened to Herb Trimpey. Suddenly everyone discovered how brilliant he was.
Yeah.
Well, I've been telling you for years you should get him back on a book, you know?
Yeah, but see, that's why, you know, that's why Sean does Criminal, because he's very aware that people go out of fashion, and he's like, I'm doing my own thing before I go out of fashion and I don't get any more work.
That's true, man.
Which I think,
it's sad, isn't
it? I think it's a very smart thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, we've got this whole sort of faux animation Steven Universe bullshit at the moment that's sort of floating around comics, and I just want someone to come back in and draw a person again. You know, there are people who do it, but it's
Do you know what I've got? And genuinely, and I'm not going to name any names, but on my computer, on my laptop, I have a file that is called Professional Artist, I Am Better Than.
Just to look at, geez, and
so if I have a day like today, right? Today, I barely managed to do one panel.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's fucking shit. But so on days like that, I look at that file and go, well, I'm better than this fucker. And he's getting paid.
I know. Mate, I can't name any names either, but I work for a publisher. You know, when I walk in the office and try and tell them all about, I don't know, you know, Master of Kung Fu, and they just stare at me blankly, and I'm like, come on, Doug Mensch, come on. You know, it's like that.
But it does surprise me, though, because it's like, it sounds like you're the same, Tony. Yeah. You know, when I properly got into comics, even as a kid, I was like, okay, where did this come from? You know, like, I love Lou Fiennes.
Yep.
Who was a Golden Age artist, but I found Lou Fiennes via Kilcane.
Right, okay.
So you look back and you go, oh, who's this guy? Why do I keep hearing about Toth? Why do I keep hearing about Milton Caniff? Who are they? Yep. Let's find out about them.
Yeah.
But nobody seems interested these days, do they?
Yeah, there's a few of us here, and there's companies you get like Tomorrow's, and there's a few about there, you know, who are still doing it, but it's drifting away, you know. Yeah, when you're left with just me and you, just like loved comic books as a kid. You know, to talk about it, it's a sad day. But yeah, I know what you mean. There's people like, you know, we've had a lot of people on this podcast, Al and, you know, Johnny Cannon and all these guys who just love all that stuff. They want to talk about, you know, we did a whole episode of Mike Manley, you know, who's heard of him, and you know, sort of thing. I want to do one on the Phantom, you know, something like that, you know, because all roads lead to the Phantom, it seems, at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And that's why, you know, I was a little bit concerned when I put Stan and Jack, because I was like, well, are there going to be enough people who are like me?
Yeah.
But there do still seem to be some of us who are like, yeah, A, I get the jokes. B, I am interested in not just Stan and Jack, but I mean, I put in the fourth issue with Steve Gerber, I put a scene where Jack and Steve go into a bar,
right?
And the barman is there, and it's Duffy Voland, who is about the most obscure person in comics you can imagine.
Okay.
He was a friend of John Burns, who was on the periphery of comics.
Okay.
I think he maybe wrote one Charlton script or something like that.
Yeah, cool.
And they always used to joke that, because he looked like your avuncular barman, that he had a bar called Duffy's Tavern.
Right.
So I put Jack and Steve in Duffy's Tavern, expecting nobody to get that.
Yeah, yeah.
Lo and behold, somebody got it.
Oh, nice.
Somebody on Twitter went, that's Duffy Voland.
Yeah. So, why isn't Byrne drawing a Marvel comic as well? Like, I just like to say that straight off. I know because he's a difficult bastard. But, you know, this will break your heart. This is the worst story I'll ever tell you. Is I was at a convention manning a table, and standing next to my table was George Perez chatting to three cosplayers. One was Electro, one was Kingpin, and one was Raven from New Teen Titans. And the girl from Raven, he was saying to the bloke with the Kingpin, he says, I've never drawn the Kingpin. I've always wanted to draw the Kingpin. And the Raven went, who are you? All right. And he went, I'm George Perez, well, you know, artist. And she went, what have you drawn? At which point I'd sort of sidled away because I was sort of standing there waiting to shake his hand and have a photograph. And I sort of sidled away and I can't, this is too cringeworthy. I can't stand here. I feel too disappointed with the world. You know.
But she was really lucky because by all accounts, Perez is the nicest guy in the world.
No, he was super nice to her. Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
He's a big lump as well, bigger than I expected. He's quite a tall guy. Yeah. What else are you reading at the moment? What other sort of books are you reading, dude?
What am I reading at the moment? I've been reading some Modesty Blaise again, because I'm always reading Modesty Blaise. I love that.
I went to a comics art shop selling comic strips in Stockholm about a year and a half ago, and it had so many Modesty Blaise originals, you wouldn't believe it. I took pictures of loads of them and just sent them to John Freeman, who got very excited, texted them to him.
I love John.
Yeah, I do too, yeah. Yeah.
But that's another one, you know, why doesn't everybody know Modesty Blaise?
I know, yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
There's all kinds of stuff that people don't. I mean, like, I'm just looking at the shelf there, Jeff Hawk, which
I've got Jeff Hawk in front of me here, so I've got the one with the, I think it's a Bolan cover, actually.
That's the one, yeah, The Ambassadors, yeah. Fantastic strip.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of, particularly in lockdown, you know, there isn't much opportunity to get new stuff, but there isn't much new stuff I like, really. Yeah. I mean, I liked the Wonder Woman Dead Earth, I liked.
Oh, yeah, Warren that's Johnson, the one, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty
good. Yeah, we had him on the pod, actually. I met him a few. He's the sweetest guy in the world, nicest guy in the world.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, that's a good book. But then I love post-apocalypse, like Cobalt 60. If you say to me, it's a, like Atomic Hercules, if it's a post-apocalypse book, bang, I'm there straight away.
Somebody said to me earlier, who's on the podcast, what are you recording, who are you recording with? And I said it's with Pete Dory. You might know him because I mentioned him. He's the one who keeps messaging me saying, page eight.
I would never do such a thing. Like you, I'm a lapsed Catholic. In fact, you're a lapsed Catholic.
I am,
so
my friend.
You can't
I am. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, we have to do that. Yeah. Brother Lawrence, let me.
So, yeah. So, there isn't. It's really tricky because I don't want to be that fan who's like, oh, modern comics are shit.
Yeah.
Because they're not. But there is a fuck of a lot of shit.
There's an awful lot of tech crap, yeah. I got my, because I get a pull list through one of these curbside delivery companies that took over from Orbital Comics, and they sent me the list of comics I've got to pay for today, you know, for the next delivery. And I looked at it and thought, the day's gone by when I would have been super excited about getting a couple of issues of Batman and a couple of issues of Detective Comics, but it's just going to be the same old shit again. Yeah.
Well, you know, my mate Dave, who we were talking about earlier, he is the ultimate Marvelite, and he has bought everything since day one. He's got nearly the complete Avengers, nearly the complete Spidey. He's got the complete Conan, complete Tomb of Dracula.
Nice. Yeah.
He gave up on Marvel last year, and it was like the Earth shifted off its axis.
I know.
And he just went, I've had enough of this. It's bollocks. It's all bollocks. Fuck it. I'm just going to stick to the stuff I've got and I'm just going
to
read
I wonder if that's what lockdown will do to people. I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but I think if you ask a lot of people now, you know, you're quite happy reading the old books. I mean, I've got enough unread comics in these two rooms at the top of my house that I could keep reading until I was dead, you know.
Me too.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. It's funny. And I think with the distribution being so flaky these days, I don't know what's going to happen, but... Yeah, it's sad days. I like the Marvel app, though. I have to say, I subscribed, me and a couple of pals subscribed to the Marvel app when the lockdown started. And it's only $8.99 a month, and pretty much everything you want to read's on there. Yeah.
Right.
It's pretty good.
I mean, I was buying Daredevil.
Yeah, the Chips Zdarsky Daredevil, I quite liked it, actually. Yeah, it's all right. Good art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. I mean, like I said, I was on Charles' podcast, and I said the same thing to him. The most I hope for is you're not going to offend me. I'm not going to go, this isn't fucking Daredevil.
Yeah. That's not Fool Killer. What are you doing? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, at least if you can do, I'll go, well, that was all right. It didn't hurt me. That's fine. And then I just forget about it, you know, and go back to Miller or Colon or something.
Yeah, go back to OMAC or something. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Oh, I love OMAC.
I'm having an Eclipse Comics rip. I'm ripping through Eclipse Comics again at the moment. That's my current one. Yeah, I've just reread Scout.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm a big fan of. Yeah, all that sort of thing.
I've only read a couple of issues of Scout.
It's a bit nuts.
Is that, that's Tim?
Tim Truman.
Truman, is it? Yeah. I like Tim
Truman. Yeah, it's good stuff.
I'm trying to think what else they did. Well, Eclipse, the Eclipse magazine.
That was good, yeah, and it had, didn't it have some Spirit in it as well at some point, I think?
I might have done.
Maybe. Yeah, no, it's good stuff. Yeah, like a magazine-sized one, that one. Yeah.
Was Somerset Holmes?
Yes, I think you're right, actually. Yeah.
That was great. That was brilliant. Yeah, I read some. I sort of dropped off from comics at about that time, but there were a few things that I picked up.
Yeah, there's like Airboy and Luger and First Wave. And they did a whodunit comic, which is actually pretty good. Yeah. Good, mate. Otherwise, we could talk like this forever. We'll have to do another one. But where can people buy your comics and where can they find you online, Pete?
Well, I'm on Twitter, obviously, and it's Pete Dorey, not like the cartoon fish. It's Dorey. I'm also, you can read Stan and Jack for free if you subscribe to Comic House, or you can order it from Comic House, or you can order it from me at petedorey.bigcartel.com. There probably are some copies still in Goss somewhere if you ask for them.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, that's, I think that's it for now. I'm just trying to think. I feel like it's somewhere else. No, can't think.
No,
but if you're not sure, find me on Twitter and I'll send you.
Yeah, you're very interactive on Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Good old man. You can buy my comics at neverironanything.bigcartel.com. There's no absolutely zero connection between me and Tony Osman, for anyone's information. Find me on Twitter, although I'm having Don't Get Blood on My Cock badges made. Follow me on Twitter at SOSEZOHYZ. Thanks, man. That's been really good. And do you know what?
No, thank you.
I like this because it gets me to read stuff that I haven't thought of for fucking years. And I hadn't thought of him for absolutely yonks. And it's been a real rabbit hole of an education. I really enjoyed that. Good stuff, man. If you think of another one, think of something else, come back on. We'd love it. Yeah.
Well, let's do Kilroy.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do Gerber. Whatever you want.
Good stuff, man. Good, and I'll say goodbye to you, and in a second we will continue talking. See you later, mate. Cool. Take care.
All right. Cheers. Thanks, Tony. Bye.